Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with John O'Hurley, who is appearing in Chicago at the National Theater here in Washington, D.C. John, thanks for joining us on WTOP.
No, good to be here. Thanks for asking.
Take me back. When did you first experience Chicago? Did you see the on Broadway when you were younger? Did you see
I saw the play back in the late 70s, back when it was in its original concept. Much more vaudevillian, very slapstick. All the music was there, but they didn't quite. And it came out the same year that A Chorus Line did on Broadway. So it kind of lived
75?
Kind of lived in the shadow of Chorus Line in terms of the Tonys. So it never really got the recognition. And it was a musical ahead of its time, darkly comedic and about the jazz era. At the same time that Broadway was looking for, you know, a lot of the dancers, and that's why Chorus Line did so well. Resurrected in 1995, and since then it has run every day ever since, and it's the longest running American musical to date, celebrating 18 years right now, and no end in sight. We have it on tour every year. I take it around to 10 or 12 cities, and we're halfway through our run right now, and are having the best time at the National Theater.
Awesome. Yeah, I was actually, speaking of the National Theater, I was there last night for the sold-out show. It was fantastic. Great job.
Thank you.
You play the lawyer character, Billy Flynn,
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, if our listeners remember the movie, that was the Richard Gere part. Mm-hmm. How did you become a part of this show?
Right after Dancing with the Stars, the first season that I was on there, right after that ended, I had an opportunity to do a kind of pick and choose from a lot of different things, and I thought about going to Broadway because I had always heard about Chicago, and everyone said, that's the role you should be doing, that it was kind of made for you. Well, I'd never seen it, so it didn't really... I mean, I'd seen it, you know, early, right. But the original concoction of the role didn't really appeal to me. I went to see the revival there on Broadway, and I said, that's the role I want to do. You know, he's an eloquent, dangerous, now, I mean, the way they've changed the concept of the character, he's elegant, he's dangerous, he's eloquent, and just one of the great leading men roles that has been written on Broadway. So very appealing to me. So 2005, met with Barry Weisler, who runs the show, owns the show, and I sat down for drinks with him, and I said, I want to do the role. And sure enough, 2 months later, I'm opening on Broadway in Chicago.
That's fantastic. In terms of the show, just speaking to some of my favorite bits from last night, I mean, I loved how you interacted with the orchestra. There's a scene where you grab the conductor's wand and
I have a lot of little things that I throw into the show. They give me a little bit of leeway and fill in some moments with my own.
I was going to ask. Is that like stuff you came up with on your...
Every time I have certain things that I throw in. Back in 2009, when Blagojevich was the huge problem, and he had just sold the Senate, he had just sold the rights to Obama's seat in Chicago. There was a line in the show when I said, if Jesus Christ had $5,000, if Jesus Christ lived in Chicago, and if he had $5,000. Well, he'd have himself a Senate seat, I'll tell you that. Well, it stopped the show, and it got all sorts of press. And
yeah, well, you still have that line kind of in the show, but no more Blagojevich.
You've
morphed it a little bit. Another part I loved is the ventriloquist number. You have Roxy
Amazing.
Hart
yep.
sitting
on my lap, acting as my my dummy, and I do the entire press interview kind of mouthing, or she mouthing the words that I'm... my answers to the press. So it's a brilliantly scribed number. I think one of the most innovative numbers ever done in Broadway history. I think it's just so fantastic that they came up with the concept, not only the melody, the great arrangement of that song, and then on top of that, Fosse doing the choreography to that number is just out of this world. But I think it's one of the most innovative numbers ever done in theater.
On top of Bob Fosse's innovative choreography of that number. Talk about working with this particular Roxy Hart. I mean,
Bianca American is a huge star in Mexico and is going to be an even huger star. She is just beyond belief. And, to say that she's a triple threat kind of cheats her by probably a couple of talents. She is so completely... Roxy Hart. I think she's the best that's ever done the role. And I think the statistics over the last 2 years that she and I have been doing the show on tour and on Broadway support me in saying that, because we've been sold out on the run everywhere we go in the country. They just like seeing the two of us together and add in Tara McLeod as Vilma, and she is unstoppable. And the show is unstoppable.
Absolutely. Well, it was unstoppable last night. Talk about playing in front of A Washington audience, a cultured audience, and especially at the National Theater. How special is
that? Well, the National Theater is truly just acoustically one of the best in the country, with a hands down. It's an alive house. The audience is literally 4 feet from you when you're on that stage, and it still has 1,800 people. So it's a large house, but it's intimate. And so that sets up for that feeling of doing a play in the basement for your parents, and right. It has that kind of intimacy to it. So that helps a lot for a show like this. And I love bringing it to Washington because Washington has such smart people. You know, you can't say that about,
yeah. Well, say that about too many people. Well, sitting in the room right now.
It's smart because this show is so full of so much comedic nuance that it takes smart audiences to get it, to really, really enjoy the show. And as you could tell from being in the show last night, or being in the audience last night, this audience really gets it.
People
and
were howling. I don't want to give anything away, but there's a bit with one of the jurors that Did I catch you break up a little bit?
Yeah,
I thought so.
I pierced the veil last night a little bit.
That's okay every now and then. It's like watching an SNL skit. When they lose it, sometimes it's even funnier.
You know, there are moments when it deserves, you know, when you spent that much time with an audience and they're engaged in the humor of the moment too. It's okay to break it.
Were you ever tempted to break it back during the Seinfeld days, working with such comedic people? Like
there are moments when I'm in the middle of those endless Peterman monologues that would go on and on. If you watch the corner of my mouth, it wants to go up. And I can see there are two or three episodes that I can still see it. A little corner of my mouth is still twitching.
Our corners were going up too. Do you remember which moments of those were? Which scenes?
There was the Elaine, take it from me, it's going to be rough in there. But cue to you, better bring a poncho.
One of my all-time favorite Peterman moments. Do you mind segueing into this a little bit? Okay. One of my favorites was the backwards episode when you do your Apocalypse Now, your Brando, the horror.
Yeah, that was a wonderful parody, and they did the lighting and everything else the same way. My favorite moment in that show is when Elaine finally arrives on the scene because I'm the only poet warrior that she could find in the neighborhood, and I turn to the 15-year-old boy that's sitting at the entrance to the cave, and I look at him and I say, Mugala, Mugala Majaba. And he gets up and he walks out, and she turns to me and she says, Mr. Peterman, you speak Burmese? And I said, oh, for heaven's sakes, no, Elaine. That was gibberish.
you believed everything except for throwing the bananas at Dennis Hopper. You had had it down. Yeah. You probably knew the lines better than Brando did when he showed up.
You know, historically, Brando used to write the lines down. He never memorized a line. If you look in all of his films, everything was written somewhere because that's what he was doing. He's always looking off camera because he's reading his lines.
Really? Yeah. I knew that with Marilyn Monroe a lot, but I didn't know
Brando
it for Brando.
Brando was famous for it. He never memorized a line.
Really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Is there any, you probably ask Seinfeld stuff all the time. Is there, what behind the scenes stuff do we, because we all have our favorite moments of on-screen Peterman, Elaine, interactions. But behind the scenes as people working with Julia, give us a little insight into what that was like.
Well, they were the four smartest actors I've ever worked with. And that is the essence of good comedy, because you can't be a good comic actor unless you're a really smart person, because you have to understand what irony is, and not a lot of people do. There are people that can, and the beauty of the comedic actors on Seinfeld is that they were willing to throw themselves under a bus in order to make something funny. Yeah. Julia is a great example of that. She's willing to make herself seem so infinitely unattractive to get the laugh, hence the dance, and the other things that she came up with, the pushing, no matter what it was, somebody being sponge-worthy, just she's willing to go to places where other actresses would, it's like that's not my style, but she would go down with the ship to make something funny.
What makes it still, it's still super relevant. We hear people in the newsroom quoting it every day. More than any other show.
Well, because it was about language. It was about taking a subject and dicing it apart down to the most minuscule moments and then finding a few more. And then if you took three of those particular topics and then you make them cross at one point in the show so that all three subplots always crossed. Then you have this, you know, this recipe for brilliance. Now, it was about writing. I mean, if you think about it, you know, there was no action in the show.
Sure.
Any movement in the show really was Kramer's, you know,
that making the bus stops or whatever.
His skid stops that he would do in the middle of Jerry's or the entrance into Jerry's apartment. But it was all about language. Yeah. I mean, you could basically everybody stood around and talked, which brings me to the point of saying that I don't know that the show would have been as funny today in the cell phone area.
That's true.
I think everybody has their heads down now, you know, and there's certain things that are on texting and what have you that are funny too. But Seinfeld was funny because people looked each other in the eye and they talked, and conversations were more important back then.
You couldn't go to Monk's Diner with people on their cell phones. No. And totally the Kramer movie phone bit would not have worked because people would be online. Why don't you tell me the name of the movie?
Or exactly the Merv Griffin talk show episode. Yes. Yeah. It wouldn't have existed.
Certain things are of that time, but there was also ahead of its time. I mean, We're Not Gay, not that there's anything wrong with it, or Festivus with religion, or the Native American episodes. That's a conversation we're still having in D.C. with the Redskins name, with, you know, the Kramer episode, with scalping tickets. I mean, it was way ahead of its time on a lot of social issues, too, and I think that keeps it relevant.
And actually, there's one episode that I don't know that they can show anymore. It's because I do a whole rant on referring to opium as the Chinaman's nightmare or something like that.
That
apparently caused such a stir that they had to pull
that
out of
it.
Oh, gosh, one of the last few episodes. I don't know. Yeah,
right.
I don't know.
Okay.
It was in the last season.
Well, most of it still holds up.
The Puerto Rican Day episode.
Oh, yeah, that's the one with the ribbons. Mm-hmm. Or the ribbons. Just final question. I mean, so from moving on from that, I mean, you're obviously aware of its legacy. It just celebrated the big anniversary last year and had a bunch of, you know, screened on TBS and all that. But moving on from Seinfeld, you've done Dancing with the Stars, Family Feud, you know, now back to Chicago and all the other stuff you work on. I mean, how do you juggle appreciating the legacy but also not being defined by it? How do you reinvent yourself? Because you've continually done it successfully.
Well, I just do a lot of different things. But, you know, for the most part, I kind of live by my imagination. Whatever my imagination tells me to do, that little pictures in my imagination are what I follow. I've written three bestsellers on dogs. Mm-hmm. I host the National Dog Show, and that came really because the phone rang one day 13 years ago from the head of NBC Sports and said, woof, woof. And I said, okay, I'm there. You know, I don't try to scribe a career.
Sure.
I basically look over my shoulder and say, well, there it is. It's behind me.
Let it come to you.
So it does. It's amazing how opportunity speaks, and I've always let it speak. But I also don't deny the concept of imagination, and I let that. If the idea to write a book comes to me, I'll sit down and I'll write a book. I compose, and I've got several albums that are out and have all done really well on Billboard, and it's because I'll sit down and I'll go, okay, I'm going to spend 6 months doing this album. I kind of let my imagination be my guide, so it's the reason I have an eclectic career at best.
That's great. Any hints for our listeners on what's next, or are we just focused on Chicago at the moment?
No, I'm going to continue with till the end of the tour on Seinfeld. Or excuse me, on Chicago. Yes,
Freudian
here I
slip.
Go. Until the end of March, and then Bryan Cranston and I have a new series together that we're in the middle of preparing. It's very unusual, so I can't talk about it. It's never been done before.
It's a TV series.
It's a TV series, and Bryan's producing it, and I'm starring in it. And it will be, if we get it all up and running, the funniest thing I've ever done on television.
Without giving away any plot, because I definitely don't want to do that. I want it to be a surprise. How did you just come across Cranston to like
Bryan and
I've
been
out?
Oh, Bryan and I've been best friends since 1983.
Oh, he was on the show.
We were best friends since 83. We were on a show called Loving together, a soap opera back in on ABC back in the early 80s, and he's been my best man at two weddings, and I fired him at that point because I said, obviously, it was you, not me. And
I didn't know he was your best man.
Best man twice, actually. Yeah, no, we've been best friends forever, and we own property together and vacation together, and yeah, we've been very close friends.
So Peterman and Whatley were hanging out all
essentially set. The same person.
Well, that's great. Hey, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to see you.
If you are in town, you definitely have to go out and see Chicago at the National Theater. It's a riot. It is. It's obviously all the classic songs, but it feels contemporary. It's got this.
It's
new
ageless.
Energy.
It really is. It has. It's about Chicago jazz, which is as popular today if you want to walk into a music bar as it was back then when they were playing it for the first time and discovering it. And it's all about that time, about the recklessness, about the, you know, celebrities back in the 30s. Remember, we had a golden age of movies, and you know, there was a whole different era back there that was where entertainment was even more popular and more pervasive than it is right now, because that's all people had.
Yeah, you couldn't watch TV.
You couldn't watch. You went to the movie theaters for everything. You went there for your news. You went there for your music.
Right,
everything. It was the theater. Theaters were everything. Movies were all. And so stars were bigger than life back then. We actually had stars back then.
Yeah, before they were just dancing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be with
you. Appreciate it.